We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the fourth chapter, text number 3. Sa evayam mayateja yoga prokta puratana Bhakta sime chakachiti rahasyamita tutamam. Translation. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you because you are my devotee as well as my friend, and therefore can understand the transcendental mystery of this science. There are two classes of men, namely the devotee and the demon. The Lord selected Arjuna as the recipient of this great science owing to his being a devotee of the Lord. But for the demon it's not possible to understand the great mysterious science. There are a number of editions of this great book of knowledge. Some of them have commentaries by the devotees, and some of them have commentaries by the demons. Commentaries by the devotees is real, whereas that of the demons is useless. Arjuna accepts Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and any commentary on the Gita following in the footsteps of Arjuna is real devotional service to the cause of this great science. The demonic, however, do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna's instructions. Here is a warning about such misleading paths. One should try to follow the disciplic succession from Arjuna and thus be benefited by this great science of Srimad Bhagavad Gita.
Om Agyana Timarandasya Yanandana Salakya Sakthuru Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Siguro Siyutapada Kamalam Sigurun Vaisnavam Sya Sirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sadevam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sivisakan Vitam Stya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpati Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyacha Sakripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaisnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadhi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
So transcendental knowledge is always protected by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, that illusory energy is sometimes frowned upon as the enemy. After all, we are saying we are in war with Maya. But actually, the illusory energy is for the purpose of protection. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is protecting the association of devotees from the non-devotees by his illusory energy. Naham prakasa sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha. So my knowledge about me and about devotional service remains covered for the non-devotees. They cannot know it. And therefore, the devotees can engage in devotional service without any disturbance. And equally so, the exchanges between the Supreme Lord and his devotees can transpire without any interference of demoniac personalities. Well, that is to say, sometimes some demons appear on the scene, such as Kesi or Agasura or Trinavarta or other demons who appear to come and disturb the pastimes of the Lord. But such demons are actually only enhancing the pastimes of the Lord. It is said when Lord Krishna is playing in the forest along with his cowherd boys that at that time they first of all have their lunch packages. So these lunch packages obviously are extraordinarily good, right? Not for just an ordinary reason. It should be known that Krishna and the cowherd boys like to steal each other's lunch packages and then throw them through the sky and boys running after trying to catch them, etc. And of course, the mothers of the boys know this very well. Therefore, everyone is making very special lunch packages in the hope that maybe one day Krishna will steal the lunch packet of my son, and then possibly he will open it up and look inside and say, "Oh, what is this? Oh, this looks good." Huh. Therefore, the mothers are especially doing their very, very best to attract Krishna to steal the lunch packet of their particular sons. So these pastimes are going on, and that is not everything. Lunch is also sent to the forest by Mother Yasoda, but the problem is that the boys are too busy playing for really entering into the lunch pastimes. Therefore, every day just before lunch, some demon appears to disturb the game, and in this way, they are forced to take a temporary break, right? Krishna somehow or other has to kill that demon, and after that's done, then they say, "Well, okay, now we stop playing anyway, we may as well take some prasadam then," and they go into the second part of the pastime. In this way, each of Krishna's pastime is in itself so wonderful and absorbing that it's almost impossible to go on into the next. Right. This is how it is. Unlike the material world, while we are doing one thing, we're already thinking of another. Right? This is the nature of material life. The example I sometimes give is like eating a feast, and as we are getting the, the preparations are being served out in this case, while we're sitting down with the bucket and the spoon and all that, and, our particular row is missing out. Oh boy, you know how it is in a feast when your row is missing out and everyone else gets all the preps, right? And then, you sit there with some rice on your plate and you're not getting the cheese sabji, right? But you're kind of hungry and, you start munching on the rice and you call out, "Hey, cheese sabji, cheese sabji." So you munch up all the rice and you have never actually tasted it, but you just automatically eat it, well, because your attention is all on the cheese sabji you don't have. And then the puris don't come. So then you have the cheese sabji, but no puris to go with it. I mean, how can you eat your sabji without the puris, right? Useless, right? "Hey, puris, here, this whole row didn't get any puris, though." And you swallow your whole cheese sabji, and you never tasted anything. And it goes on, the whole thing like that, right? When it's the sweet rice, you're thinking of the gulabs, and when it's the gulabs, you're thinking of that piece of cake that is not reaching, and like that, right? In fact, you didn't taste anything of the whole feast, because every time we were thinking of the next preparation. So this is the material world. We're always thinking of the next preparation, right? Chanakya Pandit also spoke about one girl who was talking to one boy, flirting with another, and thinking of a third, right? And of course, that goes for boys as well. This is the nature of the material world. We're always thinking of the next, because actually we are restless and not satisfied with the present. But in the spiritual world, the present is so amazing that they decided, let it be ever-present. Therefore, in the spiritual world, it is ever-present. And in the material world, it's always the future. It's always the future, just now coming, the carrot dangling in front of our nose, but unfortunately, that future moves along with our nose, and in this way, we can never attain our desired dreams and goals. This is the material world. In the material world, it is para bhavas tavat abhudajatam na yigyasitu atmatattvam. In the material world, everyone therefore is defeated in his attempts to get happiness in the form of the carrot. That is the great difficulty in material life. So, devotees don't have much faith in that. It is funny, we may have hopes in the material world, but we don't have so much faith in it. And we know that it's not really going to work. And then Krishna will send us some confirmations, to remind us it's not going to work. And then we think, yes, it's really not going to work. Although we do naturally have a desire for happiness. Everyone wants happiness, and to wait until maybe one day we go back to Godhead, that could be a long time. And if we have to wait all that time for happiness, and before that just practice austerity, then possibly we're not going to last. It might be that we want a little happiness in between. Fortunately, Krishna consciousness is not a process where you have to wait until you go to heaven and then it's going to happen, or until you go to the spiritual world. No, in Krishna consciousness, it is said it is susukham kartamavyayam. It is joyfully performed. So the pleasure also comes in devotional service and must come in devotional service. And if it's not coming, then we must be doing something wrong. Then we should check, what is it? The senior Vaishnavas can help us in this regards to find what is the cause that we are not experiencing any pleasure in our devotional service. Because devotional service in itself is the internal energy, which is the pleasure potency. It is the very pleasure potency which can attract Krishna, and which gives pleasure to Krishna and also to his devotees. But if that devotional service is mixed with many impurities, with many material desires and offenses, then it is possible that within that devotional service we are not experiencing much taste. Then that correction may have to be made to not maintain our material desires and to not commit the offenses against the holy name. But if we do so, then we will surely enter into the realm where the curtain gets lifted, the curtain of the illusory energy. And as soon as that gets lifted a little, there is the taste, there is the nectar, there is the amazing adventure of meeting Krishna. And of trying to attract Krishna. See, Krishna is a reality. The materialist is still arguing whether there is a God or whether there is not, and gets into deep debates and tries to turn over the ontological arguments for the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or not, and all that kind of stuff, right? We are... Yes, we are also studying a bit of philosophy, but then in the end, philosophy alone, what will it do for us? What is the value of philosophy without devotional service? Then it is dry. Therefore, We need devotional service. And as soon as we engage in devotional service, sooner or later, there will be some reciprocation. Krishna will reveal himself to us, right? Undoubtedly. So it's not the question whether Krishna exists or not. It is just what can we do to overcome our conditioning so that we can attract Krishna with our service and get some mercy. That is our meditation. Therefore, a devotee knows that it is by the mercy of Krishna that the curtain of ignorance, the curtain of illusion, is lifted up. And he knows that that mercy of Krishna can be attracted by making a special sacrifice for Krishna. Therefore, in some way or other, we have to think of a sacrifice, something we can do, whatever it may be. That's not the same for everyone. Everyone has his own nature, his own capacity, and there's something which everyone can do which is easy for him. Right. Of course, sometimes we are asked to make a sacrifice which is difficult for us by the devotees. And such a sacrifice is also very much appreciated. But in the end, we are engaging people according to their natures. That is natural, that you engage people in the service of Krishna in what they're good at. We're not putting the guy who can't cook in the kitchen and the one who can't sing, we make him in charge of the kirtan and like that because there's more surrender or something like that, you know. No, everyone can engage his natural propensities and talents in the service of Krishna. So in this way, Krishna consciousness is actually very nice. It is an extension of our personality, not a limitation. It is not that it is a very narrow process. It is not the process where we become totally restricted and where we can't do anything in this world. On the one side, Hare, on the other side, Krishna, on either side of our eyes, and we don't see anything else. Hare here and Krishna there, and that's it, right? Outside of there, there is nothing. But actually, it may appear like that in the beginning, that is this it, right? When I, in the beginning in Krishna consciousness, every class was just about, you couldn't engage in sense gratification. It was always against sense gratification. Every lecture, and I really thought, do you guys have to rub it in or something, you know? Right? It's tough enough, you know? Do you really have to, every lecture, there's go, no sense gratification, you know? It's like, come on, you know? It's like, give us a break. I really felt like that. And on my first Korponim, they locked me in a room the whole day, and we had to fast. And the whole room, we had to roll sweet balls, and I did nothing the whole day but rolling sweet balls, right? And there was an ocean of sweet balls, and I was absolutely starving, right? It was just too much. It was too much. At 4 o'clock, I escaped from that room and went to a supermarket and bought some fruits, you know, and offered them up and ate them up. I couldn't handle it any longer. It's getting too austere. So it may be felt in the beginning that Krishna consciousness is a very oppressive process where we have to restrict ourselves artificially very much with great force and great difficulty. Principles and rising in the middle of the night, chanting an incredible number of rounds, and then you have to read every day, but you're not allowed to sleep very much, and you're almost... right, can't stay awake, and so on, right? And if you look at it all, you just think like, phew, this is impossible, right? It's but it only appears to be like that, that Krishna consciousness is limiting. Rather, Krishna consciousness is clearly expanding our vision. Who had ever thought of more than one universe? I didn't think of that. I thought of the universe and how great it was and how unlimited it possibly might be and so on. But then the whole idea that there would be unlimited universes expanded my vision of reality a little bit. Blah, 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 phew. A few extra universes came there. I never thought of life before birth. I had thought a bit about life after death, yes or no, but I never thought of life before birth. That never came to my mind very much. So many things, in so many ways, our vision expanded with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, our understanding of what reality really is and where we really are. Everything fell into place. The whole world is interested in UFOs and in abductions and all these things and what it's all about. And there are many science fiction books written about creatures from outer space, and there is absolutely no idea what's out there, right? Practically, in anybody's mind, anything can be out there. When I was a kid, there was this television series called Twilight Zone, and everyone's seen Twilight Zone, and sometimes it was really eerie. There was one particular series where the extraterrestrials came, and they were humanoids with very large brains. The brain was about this high, right? And they were very intelligent, and they were coming as friends of human beings, and they were testing them out with lie detectors to see if they were actually of good intentions, and all the tests they did, everything showed up fine. And then they organized these holiday excursions to their planet, and many people went on board. And one of these people on board found out the real truth, and that was that they were being kept like animals for food. Right. Because from the perspective of these high-brained personalities, after all, they were just simple creatures like animals. Right. So when I was a child, I saw this, it freaked me out. It took me days to get over this, you know. At night, I was looking out, like, God, you know, they're coming, right? Right, the extraterrestrials, oh no. And it really scared me, because the point was that anything could be out there. Exactly anything could be out there. Some years ago in Amsterdam, we got suddenly a huge donation of 30,000 euros from nowhere into our bank account from the Cosmic Warriors. For God's sake, what are the Cosmic Warriors, right? Never heard of the Cosmic Warriors, but anyway, it was a nice donation. So we went there to the Cosmic Warriors with the usual, what Hare Krishnas do, you know, after you get a donation of 30,000 euros, right? So a carload full of Mahaprasadam and, you know, and all that, we went to the house of the Cosmic Warriors. And when we came there, they let us in, and then inside the house, there was one wall with televisions. The whole wall was just televisions, all on top of each other, and the man had cameras in all directions, you know, like special lenses, and he said, "You see them? You see them?" And we said, what? He says, "You don't see them? Just like many of them. See, there, many of them, many. They regularly fly over this region." Right. "They regularly fly. They land right there, you know, on that field." Right. It was all about UFOs, and the man was watching them, etc. And, yes, he had also said that he had captured images. He had made photos, and he had captured images of angel-like personalities who were fighting with, like, demon-like personalities So, you know, we said, oh, well, you know, I mean, that's like nothing extraordinary. This has been going on since time immemorial. He said, oh, you know about this? Said, yes, of course, you know, the battles of the demons and the devas in the universe have been going on since the very beginning of the universe. He said, really? He said, yes, and they are residing on various different planets, and there have been huge battles in outer space. He says, you know, I'm seeing these things, right? I says, yes, okay, very nice. We even brought him some the Krishna art book, and later on, and showed him some of the pictures of the battles of the demons and the demigods. He was totally ecstatic. We hoped that he would give another donation then, of course, and gave him lots of Mahaprasadam. But whatever the man was seeing, I don't know. I found out that he was very rich and that he took a lot of cocaine also. So I don't know what he was seeing, you know. As far as the UFOs, they on his cameras, they just looked like little gray spots, you know. He said, no, but they're moving, right? You wait a few hours and then they'll move. Yeah, when the sun changes direction, then the shadows also move, the spots also move. I wasn't overly convinced by all his scientific perceptions. But whatever might be the case, right, we know the fact of the matter. We are not at all confused. Now I laugh about these so-called higher beings with bigger brains than human beings being able to fly in any time from outer space. Now I know that flying saucers belong to the lower regions, to more primitive creatures than human beings. And then recently one man in South Africa, some doctor he was, came to me and said, can I speak to you in private? Right. Well, you know, when people want to speak in private, usually go, oops, you know. Anyway, but I'm quite busy. I don't have too much time, but okay, a little time. And then he said, here, he gave me a card. He said, you should read these websites, you know. It's all about the reptilians, you know, the reptilians, you know, it's a conspiracy. You know, they have mystic power and they can take different forms. Is it? We know all that. That's old hat, you know. Srimad Bhagavatam has long ago told us about this. Taksa came and took the form of a human being, although he was actually a snake bird. He said, snake birds, you know about snake birds? He said, of course we know about snake birds. We know all about these reptilians. They live on subterranean planetary systems and are known in the Vedic scripture as the Nagas. But they can only touch the sinful people. Only a sinful person can be touched by such personalities, such demoniac personalities. Therefore, one who is pious doesn't have to worry about it at all. They cannot touch them. They cannot reach them. As simple as that. So don't worry. Just chant Hare Krishna. Join the kirtan. Let's go back to the kirtan. Instead of these secret discussions about the reptilians, you know. Do you know about them? So, how wonderful Krishna consciousness is. It is said that very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you. Everything falls into place. Once we come to Krishna consciousness, we know. We know what everything means, what it's all about, what the purpose is of the whole universe, what is to be expected, right, in different zones and areas of the universe from different creatures, what their scope is, what they can achieve, what they cannot achieve. It is all crystal clear. And it all is logical and makes sense. And we see how everything is related to the Supreme Lord. And we know that the demons have no chance, right, because the Supreme Lord will never allow them to rise above their level. At times we see a rise of the demons, right? That is a fact. But the demonic forces can never actually take control of the universe. On a few occasions it seemed that it almost was the case, but that was only the beginning of some special interference of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give real faith to his devotees. When the Lord appears to kill a very powerful demon who seems to take control of the entire universe, then the real purpose is simply to show the devotees once again, don't worry, don't get intimidated by them, right? They can't do anything. See? Okay, another demon finished by the Supreme Lord. We see the first demon that appeared in the universe was Hiranyaksha, who tried to fight with the Lord and hit the Lord with a club. And first there was a serious club fight, but then the Lord, his club slipped from his hand. And then the demon tried to hit the Lord over the head with the club, and at one point he did, but there was no effect. So the Lord said, try again. But he wouldn't try again. Right. Yes. Who can harm the Supreme Personality of Godhead? No one. No matter what form he takes, whether he's in the form of Varahadev, in the form of a boar, or whether he's in the form of a small child, Krishna can never be harmed by anyone at any time, nor can his devotee. The devotee is always protected by Krishna. There is Raksisya Titi Viswaso. One of the symptoms of Saranagati, of surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Raksisya Titi Viswaso, to have full faith that Krishna will protect us. Right. Then we'll say, yes, okay, I have faith that Krishna will protect his devotee, but then I am not really such a devotee, so will he protect me? Don't worry. Krishna protects any devotee. Right. That doesn't mean that we never get any difficulty. Oh, we do. It's not that Krishna protects his devotees and drops the grapes in their mouths while they're lying like fat blobs on the sofa. Right? Oh, thank you so much, Krishna, for protecting us. Right? It's not exactly. Could we get some other flavor of grapes, please? Right? It's not that the spiritual world is some sort of perfection of the old Roman decadence, right? But rather, the spiritual world is certainly a world of sacrifice. It is not that in the spiritual world, where there are desire trees, that the residents are eternally lying under those desire trees, never lifting a finger, and anything they desire just flies into their mouth. Right? That is not the spiritual world. Right? That's hell. Right? The spiritual world is the realm where one has to always be engaged. The spiritual world is the world where even sleeping is an activity of serving Krishna. While sleeping in the spiritual world, everyone is actively serving Krishna in his sleep. One Brahmana was dreaming that he was picking flowers in his dream, and he was just about to make some very beautiful garlands, and then he woke up and he said, oh, I couldn't finish my garlands. I couldn't finish my offering. Yes. So, sleeping is also in Krishna consciousness and increases the desire. When this devotee could not finish the garlands, his desire had only increased. So everything in the spiritual world is always about sacrifice and always, some way or other, Krishna is churning the desires of the devotee so that they will increase and increase and increase to with the desire to please Krishna. And this is Krishna's reciprocation. That's Krishna's interest in dealing with his devotees. To somehow or other, he churns their emotions in such a way that the desire for devotional service increases. So sometimes there seem to be some real setbacks. Everything seems to go really wrong in the material world, right? Especially. Everything seems to go really, really wrong, right? Everything seems to get out of hand. But actually, if we somehow or other persevere in our attempt to serve Krishna, then we will see that it is a tremendous support for increasing our service. This great problem that overcame us can become the impetus for really going to another level in our Krishna consciousness, and that is the purpose. Not only to test us, but to put us on our toes and to force us, actually, to go beyond limitations, right? Which we never would do if life was all rosy and grapes dropping from the trees into our mouth and so Mahaprasadam flying straight off the plate. There is even some proverb, just the Sanskrit, nasuptasya, mrikasya, something like that, which I can't remember fully, but that it is said that the deers, they don't run into the mouth of the sleeping lion. Right? Even although the lion is the most powerful animal in the entire forest, it is not that the deers just run into his mouth. So everyone has to make endeavor. And in the material world, everything is arranged in that way. It is said that in the Vaikuntha palaces, the ladies are every day sweeping the palace. But there is no dust. There's no dust. Still they're every day sweeping the palace. Right? Here in the material world, if there was no dust, well, you know, we wouldn't clean, would we, you know? In fact, most of the time we're waiting till somebody writes in the dust, you know, I want to be cleaned, or some other joke, you know, whatever they write, right? You know, and then it gets too embarrassing, and then, okay, well, I guess, you know, we are going to have a big maha cleanup. But without dust, we're not going to clean, right? No question. But in the spiritual sky, there is no dust, and still they clean, because they have understood the real purpose of cleaning Krishna's temple. It's not at all to remove the dust. It is to serve Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure. So that's inconceivable to us, right? That they are sweeping the floors, although there is no dust on these floors. Can you imagine? But yet they're sweeping, right? For Krishna's pleasure. It's amazing. Inconceivable from material logic, I know. Even my brain is, I've thought about this point many times, it's difficult to understand, but still, it is described like that and going on like that. So it's a different world. A world where Krishna is served out of desire, not out of force. But in the material world, Krishna knows that our desire is mixed. We have a little bit of desire to serve him, and we also have some desire not to serve him. And therefore, Krishna makes some arrangements to somehow or other torpedo our life a little bit, right? So that we again get on track, and that we again think, well, okay, I guess I should really get my spiritual life together. And again, Krishna is doing this to us. Therefore, that explanation that there are different ways of learning by hearing. Some people learn by hearing, some people learn by experience, and some people don't learn at all, even after hearing and after experience, they say. Now, first class person is he who learns by hearing. Unfortunately, most of us are not like that, and therefore Krishna sends us these intense experiences. And therefore, it boils down to either following this wonderful knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, or be smashed again, right? And over the years we begin to realize this, right? That's what it is. Either get into it, into following the Gita, and into the process of devotional service, or get smashed, right? And just wait till it comes. So after a while, one gets tired of this. I was told that Hridayananda Maharaj once prayed in front of the deities for purification and said, "My dear Krishna, please arrange for my purification softly." With the years, one gets to that point, right? Softly, please. Been smashed too many times. I also am not as eager to pray for Krishna, please take away my material desires. I'm also in this carefully. Don't break anything this time, if possible. Because smashed just a couple of times too many for my taste. But I know it's probably not the last time. There's probably more coming and more deserving and so on. And what can we do? Whatever comes, we'll just have to accept it, grin and bear it somehow or other, and say, you know, with some plasters here and there, the mercy of the Lord. I deserve it, sinful wretch, right? I was just, years ago, I was in Vrindavan just recovering from malaria attack number, I don't know how many, and I was sitting on a chair after 1 week knockout on a bed, leaning against the pillar. I had lost about 15 kilos and looked like a living skeleton. And Bhavananda, in all his friendliness, walked by and said, "You are so sinful." Just when I kind of, just in case, I might feel a little sorry for myself. Oh, boy. Thanks, right? Thanks for the sympathy. Really appreciate it, you know. Well, nothing like a few words of encouragement, right? So what can we say? But of course, in an absolute sense, it was true. On the human level, it was a bit on the rough side. But in the absolute sense, it was true. I was sitting there like a skeleton, all wiped out, because I am sinful. Yes. So, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness definitely puts everything into perspective, right? Into a different perspective than all the mushy stuff of the whole world, right? It just brings it all down to sometimes hard reality, but then again it makes things crystal clear and brings us to the point to understand, yes, it's not going to be so cheap to become purified from my material attachments, because I'm pretty stubborn. Sometimes the argument is brought out, why did Krishna have to arrange all this suffering? Yeah. It is said that we ourselves bring the suffering upon ourselves. We are responsible. But why did Krishna create the world full of suffering? Why didn't he just let us be independent, right, from him, and just, okay, experience the emptiness then? But why so much additional suffering in this world, right? From broken legs to broken heads to every bone in between, right? To broken relationships, to broken houses, right? To, you know, anything you can possibly break, right? Why does everything always have to break, right? You know what I mean? My car, you know, if you smash in my car, I'd break your face, right? You know? Some walk puts on the back of his car, right? You know? It's all about breaking. Yeah. Why is this going on? Why is this going on? Why couldn't Krishna just, have a softer world, right? A softer world where, okay, the only suffering is the emptiness of not having him, and then after a long time suffering that emptiness, then, you know, someone can come to his senses and take up devotional service and then go back to Godhead. Why didn't he just arrange it like that? Wouldn't that be a much more humane approach to taking people back to Godhead? Why did he have to put in the torture chambers and all that, right? And all the other, all the type of suffering, right? Parma Karuna, isn't it, you know? Huh? Just, why? You know? So, the answer is, it's his causeless mercy. He is so kind. Right. Because we are so stubborn, right? We would never reform, right? You say, well, you know, okay, I'll try. I know it's empty without Krishna, but then again, you know, you can try and fill it up with some enjoyment. I guess I'll try one more time, right? And try once again, the same old story, and go for it again. Yes, that's go, 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 right? So we would probably never really come to our senses, right? So every once in a while, we do need that little slap, right? Just like kids cannot always understand the punishments of that they receive, right? I also thought it was totally unjust what was done to me, right? We had this mate, and she was outright nasty. She would grab my ear between two fingers, squeeze very hard, and then turn, right, in a nasty way. So I really thought this was mean, you know, outright mean. And one day I struggled myself free from her grip and escaped, and I stood at some distance, and I said very coolly and very serious, I said, you just wait till I grow up. Right? And she was a little bit intimidated, you know? Huh? And I was serious, you know, I was going to grow, and I was ready to wait, you know, and then, you know, I'll talk to you again, right? But unfortunately, you know, as I grew up, my whole perspective of reality changed, you know, and by then I could understand that there were certain reasons. I still thought she was quite mean, actually, you know, I still think up to the day of today that she was mean. But I also know that I was wild and totally outrageous. One of my favorite games was throwing a tennis ball onto the roof of the house, then climb up on the rain pipe, then go on the slippery roof tiles and just somehow or other try and get that ball. I tried to throw it exactly in a joint, you know, so that it was getting up high, so that I had to really do some serious mountaineering there. And so I can appreciate that actually they were getting upset with me. Now I can. Then I thought it was totally ridiculous, and totally unreasonable and unjust, and for no reason. She was just torturing me because she was cruel. Right? That was it. I'd figured it all out. Right? In the same way, now from our own childish perspective, we are looking at the Supreme Personality of Godhead and think, why did he have to put all this heavy stuff in the world? But it takes a heavy medicine to cure a heavy disease. And it's interesting how every nationality around the world is manifesting the quality of stubbornness in a particular individual way, right? I know that the Dutch, you know, we are representing stubbornness. This is our national trait, you know. We are stubborn, we have hard heads, really hard heads, right? And I know, like, if you say to any Dutchman, you know, like, you try to push him, he said, look, you know, forget it, that picking meat, you know, he says, I can't translate it, but he'll just say, you know, no, forget it, you know, I mean, just forget it, I'm just not going to do it, okay, you know, no way, right? No way. Then I noticed that, and I'm preaching also in Belgium, and in Belgium it's different. You just tell somebody something and he doesn't want to do it. He just won't tell you anything, but he just won't do it. Huh? So like this, you know. Every country has its own way, right? But everyone is totally stubborn, right? In India, you know, you can try as much as you like, and everyone will say, they will never say, forget it, you know. No, an Indian will never say forget. He will say, yes, yes. And he'll laugh even while he's saying it to your face. He'll say, yes, yes, yes. They laugh, and they'll never do it. Right? They'll never do it. So there are just different ways of responding, but in every country of the world, it's actually the same. People are totally stubborn. Totally stubborn. I don't know exactly the Aussie way of being stubborn, but I guess you guys, you know. Huh? Okay, you can think about that. Huh? Huh? You just don't do it. You don't say anything. You don't say anything, like the Belgian way. Tomorrow. Shibura. No worries. Huh? Good on you. Good on you, right? Yeah, like that. But stubbornness is the trait of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is terribly stubborn. Not only human beings, animals are also stubborn, right? Oh boy, you tell a dog, stop barking. You know, shut up, dog. Shut up. Shut up. He has to have a last little bark, isn't it, you know? He's got to have it, you know. God, every living creature is stubborn, right? In Vrindavan, during Bhagavatam class, we have lots of insects, you know. In India you have that. And you have all these ants, you know, big ants, right? Some of them have, like, big fangs on their nose, you know. So they bite quite nasty, so you're watching them, you know, you see them coming. And when they get too close, then with your finger, boing, you send it right back to where it came from, right? This is a pastime during Bhagavatam class. Everyone's doing it. And then this ant turns around again and comes straight back, you know? Stubborn like anything, right? Just a little ant, but he knows where he wants to go. And then, you know, the best thing to do is distract him, right? You know, and you send him to your neighbor, and then you see the neighbor is watching him. It comes closer, and then the neighbor does the same thing. And this way, there is a lot of entertainment during Bhagavatam class. Right? One year we had a plague of grasshoppers, and the whole temple was filled with green grasshoppers. Bhagavatam class became almost impossible because the grasshoppers were bouncing off the speaker, etc. Really true story. Was a plague of grasshoppers, yeah. I'll never forget that. Green grasshoppers, the whole temple filled with them. Boing. Anyway, we went on with the class. Grasshoppers or no grasshoppers, right. But the stubbornness is there in every conditioned soul. That is what conditioning is all about it, right. This stubbornness to just do what I want. And I'll do it anyway. Yes, I will. Right. So, with this mentality, it is quite clear that sometimes Krishna may have to use a little force, you know, a little slap, bang. No, I don't really want to do this so much. No, I just spontaneously changed my desire. Yes. Krishna knows, you know, that sometimes it takes a bit of a shock. Mr. Pavlov, who was a scientist with a real sense of humor, had these tests he did with different animals and with rats. He had a thing of three gates, a box with three tunnels and then gates, right? And then behind one gate he put some food. Okay, the rats, they figured it out. Gate number one has the food. Then after a few days, he put some electric charge on the door of number one. So the rats come about dying to open the door with their nose. Big shock, right? Well, you know, you can be sure that the next day the rats did not go back to gate number one, right? They checked out gate number two and three just in case, but they didn't go back to number one. Right? They got the point, right? So the old Pavlov's experiments are really showing how Krishna's remedies work with us. We are no better than rats. Sometimes we do need a bit of a shock, right, to bring us to our senses. And this is for those who are in the lower modes of material nature. So it is all the loving hint of the Supreme Lord, who is kindly uplifting his devotees to come to the point of surrendering. And then the curtain of the illusory energy will be lifted, and we will see how Krishna is personally involved with every single of his devotees. I didn't think the class would take this turn, but somehow or other it did. I had actually in the beginning thought I would go in a different direction, but somehow or other I went into this lane and it just rolled along, and it was longer than I thought, and by now it's taken over. It took the whole class to get out of this curving lane with all its peaks and valleys, etc. So I guess this is it for tonight. It's not that I want to paint a heavy picture or something, or the picture of Krishna's heavy side. I actually wanted to say that all this is just a waste of time, and we're just wasting our time with all this heaviness. Let's just go for the shortcut instead of the whole long winding road through the hills and the valleys and the mountains and all that, and go straight for the lotus feet of the Lord by engaging in devotional service. If we do go for the shortcut, instead of waiting till we get smashed again and then get a little more serious and then get a little more lax again and then say, well, you know, Maya is so strong, what can you do, and all this. Instead, if we would just go straight for the lotus feet of the Lord, then so quickly this curtain of illusory energy would be lifted. So quickly. So there is a shortcut. Just if anyone's yeah. Okay, if there are any questions or comments, I'll try to answer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, we are so stubborn in so many ways, so stubborn, right? It is so difficult to stop being stubborn, right? And it's just, we just too stubborn to just do it Krishna's way, you know, like I'm just going to do it my way. And it's just like very hard to give that up. But Krishna fortunately has ways to attract us. And if we do a lot of service for Krishna, then he allows us a little stubbornness. He overlooks a little stubbornness also, fortunately, right? He's not so heavy that in the end he doesn't overlook a little bit of stubbornness. But that stubbornness which begins to really interfere with our service, that he smashes. Oh yes, he smashes. Yasyaham manugriham gnami tattanam harisye sanai. He takes away. Then he takes away. Prabhupada says that Krishna, he takes away our opulences, our facilities, our strength, our beauty, our wealth, right? Our fame. He takes it all away, right? And in that way, we get smashed. Yes. But the devotee becomes empowered. And that is, of course, the main theme of tomorrow, because we will speak about the most empowered of all devotees, Srimati Radharani, right? Who is like empowered in such a way that it is even beyond Krishna's comprehension. That is quite amazing. Okay, a friend who's been a devotee for 20 years takes off the neck piece. You know what that is, you know? It's like being in school. You've been going to school for many years and you just feel like being a bad boy or a bad girl and just not going to school. You know it's bad, you know it, but you just wanna just a little vacation. You're getting older now, right? And you know, after 20 years in devotional service, obviously you're getting older. And then you think like, well, you know, I can still do it, right? I can still get it. I'm still young enough, you know, to kind of do it now, So you feel the urgency, you feel the pinch, and just one more little flirtation. But all along, such devotees know very well what they're doing. They know all along that they are just in Maya. And although they desperately try to forget Krishna, they remember Krishna every moment, all the time. They just encounter Krishna all the time, everywhere. Right? So it's not so easy to shake off Krishna consciousness, and they suffer again. It's just, oh, some enjoyment this way, that way, but it will wind up with more suffering. To some extent, we should offer such devotees some mercy. Mahaprasadam is always a good thing to give, you know. And invite such devotees also for some prasadam in your home if you're inviting some other devotees. Things like that. Right? Or for Jamastami, you know, ring up, or just before Jamastami, say, come on, you know, it's Jamastami. Yeah, just calm. Okay. Of course, if somebody has the mouth full of blasphemy, that's a little difficult. The blasphemy, we send them by the mail a little packet with Mahaprasadam, you know. Yeah, you send it by mail. Yeah, pack it up. Send it, you know, courier service, you know. Or you just go, you put on a surgeon's outfit with a mask and everything and rubber gloves, you ring on the doorbell and you deliver the package, you know. Just say like, like that, you know. You make sure you protect yourself, but at the same time, we have to be merciful. Just like a doctor, you know, is merciful, right? Is someone or other trying to, is taking a risk. Doctors take all kinds of risks. It's not to be underestimated. The guys with SARS, you know, with the suits on and everything. I was in Toronto not so long ago. I've had a cough ever since. It's really true. Maybe something psychological. I went to Toronto, and, you know, as I was in Toronto, they gave you these papers, and they said that if you develop a cough within 10 days, then you should report to the health officers. And sure enough, I developed a cough within 10 days. And I never reported. Still coughing a bit. Anyway, I don't know if it's SARS or not, you know. Anyway, can you do it? I'm still alive. No, so we take some precaution. But we must be kind, you know. Sometimes devotees... There was one devotee that I met after he had been gone for years, and in the time that he was gone, he had written a book trying to... And the whole book was about how can God be a blue boy? Huh? He wrote this whole book about... He was a devotee, initiated and everything, and he wrote this whole book, how can God be a blue boy? And the whole book was about the blue boy. And you could just see, poor guy, you can't forget Krishna, can you? You're so much remembering Krishna, and you're trying so much to forget him, but you're so much remembering him that you have to write a whole book about the blue boy. Yeah. That was really so obvious, you know. I'm sure anyone could have picked it up. Yeah. So that's how it is. You can't forget Krishna so easily. So they also. So let's give them, at least prasadam should be given somehow. And if they behave nicely, you know, if they don't get too much critical, too much into blasphemy, then it's over. And a little blasphemy, well, what can you do? You know, you tolerate something. But when it starts to eat at your own mind and spin around in your own head, you know, then you know that you're not ready for this. Then you drop such a person like a stone. Anybody else?
It says you should end on a light note, so I thought like...
If the guy's a Mongol, or what did he say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, right. They're going to pull you back into the material world, you know. Million, God knows how many births, you know. Again, back to all that. And, Okay. Well, with that, we ended with a bit of a laugh, so that's auspicious. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.